Get Booked podcast, a weekly show for personalized reading recommendations. This is episode 210, and we're recording on December 10th. I love some, I don't know, parallelism? I don't know what that is. I'm Amanda Nelson, and I'm here with Jen Northington, and we're coming to you from Book Riot, and I'm fresh off a week of PTO, so I'm a little punchy.
Hey, welcome back.
Just in time to take another week off for the holidays.
That's the ideal way to do it.
It's been kind of amazing. I was thinking next year I might also save up some PTO for December and then just take like half the month off.
Yeah, I support it.
Great, because I just want to hibernate and like curl up in a blanket and not move.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, all right, so how the show works, I don't remember because I haven't been here for like 2 weeks, just kidding. So this is, as I mentioned, a show for personalized reading recommendations. So if you have a reading recommendation request, you need, you know, a gift for someone, or you just read a book that left a big hole in your heart and you need something to fill it, or you need a book club pick or whatever, you can send this to us. You can email them to us at getbooked@bookriot.com, or you can drop them in the show notes on the form on the site. If your question is time sensitive, please put that in the subject line of the email or in big letters in the first line if you're using the form so we can get to it on time. We might email you back if we aren't going to get to your question on time or if we have already answered it on the show. Okay, lots of feedback. Let's see, we've got something from Jamie who says there's a series of stories written in the 50s called All of a Kind Family about a turn of the century Jewish family in New York that have five girls that all look alike, semi-autobiographical by Sydney Taylor. They celebrate Hanukkah and Purim, and the stories always felt really cozy to me. So that's great for people looking for holiday reads. I've got one from Teresa who says, I have a suggestion for the reader who wanted a time travel book. Can't remember if she wanted time travel romance, but she mentioned Outlander. So her suggestion is A Night in Central Park, Night with a K, as all the best romances with nighttime puns are. A Night in Central Park by Teresa Reagan. I read it ages and ages and books ago, but I loved it at the time. Okay, from Sybil, we have two recs, one for Shayna, who wanted historical time travel. I recommend Time and Again by Jack Finney. And for Meredith, who wanted a big, scary book, I recommend A Brief History of Seven Killings by Marlon James. That's a challenging one right there. Scary? Do we feel like that's scary?
Well, it was like intimidating.
It is intimidating. Oh, right.
No, I mean the question, right? The question.
Right. The question was about, a doorstopper that's hard to get through. I would agree with that. It's in Patois, right? If I remember that right.
Yeah.
So the reading of it is quite difficult. So that's a good rec. Okay. Thank you, Sybil. Okay. So I'm going to read our first question. We'll get to our first sponsor and then away we will go. Our first question is from Annie, who says, I love fantasy and science fiction and I've read the genre for years, but it seems like all I can find is the not like other girls TM character. Unlike other girls, she doesn't like sewing or embroidery and would rather be sword fighting and is always getting in trouble for her unladylike behavior. My question is, where are the stories about those other girls? I love sewing. I'm a quilter myself. I love working with fabric. It speaks to me. Are you going to go fight a dragon wearing nothing but a shift? How long are you going to survive a post-apocalyptic winter wearing jeans and a t-shirt? Who is creating the elaborate costumes for the time travelers? The closest books I've been able to find so far are the Backstagers graphic novels and Behind the Scenes manga by Bisco Hattori. All right, before we get to our answers, we're going to listen to our first sponsor.
This episode is sponsored by The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy. Robbie and Trevor Cressmont have enough wealth to ensure they'll never be found guilty of any wrongdoing, even if everyone believes they're behind the deaths of their ex-girlfriends. Let us all take a collective angry sigh at that. Lauren O'Brien, the new girl at school, has a dark past of her own, and she's desperate for a fresh start. Except when she starts a relationship with Robbie, her chance is put in jeopardy. During what's meant to be their last weekend together, Lauren stumbles across evidence that might just implicate Robbie. And after a third death rocks the town, she must decide whether to end things with Robbie or risk becoming another cautionary tale. This is an edge-of-your-seat YA thriller that's perfect for fans of Karen McManus and Holly Jackson. Make sure you pick that up now wherever books are sold. And thank you once again to The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy for sponsoring today's show.
Today's episode is brought to you by Song of the Silk's Realms by Judy I. Lin. Xu Wei is a talented young musician who was orphaned at a young age. Her sole family is a kindly uncle, but then her uncle is killed, and she is, of course, devastated. With no family and no patron, Xu Wei is facing the possibility of a lifetime of servitude playing the qin. Then one night, she is unexpectedly called to perform for the enigmatic Duke Meng. He surprises Xu Wei further with an irresistible offer. Serve as a musician in residence at his manor for 1 year, and he'll set her free of her indenture. But the Duke's motives become increasingly increasingly more sus when he and Shuei barely survive an attack by a nightmarish monster. It's like, what's going on here? So this book is a sweeping epic romantasy that follows a talented young musician who is swept away to the celestial realm by an enigmatic young duke. And who doesn't want to be swept away to the celestial realm by an enigmatic young duke? She's living all our dreams, honestly. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Song of the Six Realms by Judy I. Lin for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, so for Annie, who is asking for science fiction fantasy books about the other girls, as opposed to the not like the other girls characters, Jen, what do you have?
I have one from my TBR that I've been meaning to read since I read a review of it that just like, oh, it seems so perfect. And it seems perfect for me, and it also seems perfect for you. It's Torn by Rowena Miller, and it's the first in the Unrivaled Kingdom series, and it is literally about a seamstress who can stitch magic into clothing. What? And it's inspired by the French Revolution, so it's like that historical Second World fantasy, and obviously the French court is an amazing place to be stitching magical clothing for, right? So the main character, Sophie, is a dressmaker and a charm caster and has like lifted her family out of poverty with her beautiful ball gowns and, you know, discreet embroidered spells. And she's been angling for a commission from the royal family, which could, you know, make her career, but then also involve her in the political scene, which is a lot. And because it is inspired by the French Revolution, a revolution is brewing. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that her brother is a part of the growing rebellion movement. And so they are basically, you know, from the same family on opposite sides of this huge political divide. And Sophie is going to have to choose between family and her ambitions. And I like, yeah, what this perfect, perfect. What? I cannot wait to read this book. It's actually, so I, like I said, it's the first in a series and the third one comes out next year. So the second one's already out. The third one is coming. So if you're looking for a series to dive into, this is kind of the perfect time to dive into it. And I'm hoping to get to this one over the holiday break. So again, that's Torn by Rowena Miller.
Okay, I picked Spin the Dawn by Elizabeth Lim, which is a YA novel that was pitched as Project Runway meets Mulan. And
Yes, right.
Thank you. Yes. I remember the moment I opened the package with this book in it and saw that on the like publicity insert and was like, I want 40 of these. Obviously, I'm going to wallpaper my house with this book. Anyway, so it's about a girl named Maya whose father is a very famous and well-known tailor and dressmaker. Her family falls on kind of hard times. The empire where she lives is at war, and she's lost one brother to the battle, and her other brother is really severely injured and can't fight or work. So she is working to support the family. And then the emperor calls on her father to come to court to become an imperial dressmaker, like at court, which would save her, like her family, fix all their problems. But her father is doing very poorly. He's ill and he can't make the journey. You know, if you've seen Mulan, then you understand where this is going. And so Maya cuts off all her hair and pretends to be one of her brothers and goes in her male relative's place. It's a bit of a she is like other girls. Like she's a young girl who has a fabric working or needle working talent. But in this universe, that is really reserved for men. So she has to pretend to be a boy in order to have any sort of fame or professional recognition, in order to be a dressmaker or a tailor with any kind of like esteem. So she goes to court and finds out, she was not told this, she finds out that it's not just a job, it's a competition. So she has to compete with, I think it's 12 other tailors and dressmakers from around the empire for this position as imperial tailor. It's very backstabby and competitive. One of the other competitors tries to like cut off her hand because then she can't sew anymore. Like, it's all very, like, there's a lot of peril. She develops a relationship with the court magician who seems to kind of immediately somehow know she's not a boy. And then that, you know, presents a lot of shenanigans, basically. And then there's a final challenge, which is where the fantasy element comes in, where she has to sew 3 magical gowns for the emperor's bride-to-be. That's how the empire is coming to peace. The emperor is marrying the daughter of, like, his enemies. The daughter of his enemy, basically. And she's very reluctant to attend the wedding. The bride is. And so the emperor is trying to woo her with these gowns. And so Maya has to make magical gowns. Has she been magical up to this point? The answer to that is no. So, like, what am I supposed to... How am I going to make a dress out of the laughter of the sun. This is nonsense. This literal literal nonsense. I don't understand. I'm supposed to do this. But then the magic of it kind of unfolds. So Project Runway meets Mulan. Lots of sewing. There's just a lot of sewing and silk work and spinning and like a lot of really technical garment making kind of stuff in the book with a dose of magic. It's nice. So that's Spin the Dawn by Elizabeth Lim.
Amazing. So much reading to do, mm-hmm. as always. Okay, our next question is from Grace, who says, recently, my cis male partner and I have decided that we are going to get married in the new year. We're both feminists, atheists, and working hard to decrease our consumerism and live in environmentally friendly ways. So we are avoiding the wedding industrial complex as much as possible. As a big reader, I often go to books during major life steps to seek advice and guidance, but I'm not seeing myself represented in many books about marriage. I've previously read Committed by Elizabeth Gilbert and really loved that. Looking for something similar that's a thoughtful and positive nonfiction book on marriage that may offer advice and insight to those who are genuinely working to have an equal and apparently kind of radical partnership that isn't defined by the trappings of a wedding or organized religion. You know, just like, it's a small, tiny little request.
Just upsetting all kinds of oppression in your marriage. That's great.
I like appreciate this question a lot. What'd you pick, Amanda?
I had no idea. I had to go to the contributors for this one. As a very unmarried person, I have no experience personally with this idea. So the contributors, I went to them with this question and there was a lot of crickets for a while, but we came up with some good ones. So Allie, our contributor Allie, recommended Something New, Tales from a Makeshift Bride by Lucy Nisley. It's a graphic memoir, not a graphic novel, it's an autobiography, about her experience with getting married. And it starts, the thing that I appreciate about this book is it's not just about like her wedding, it starts several years before her wedding, I think 4 years, when she's with the man that she marries, they break up because they disagree about whether or not they want to have children. And then she spends several years being single, like dating around. And then her ex changes his mind about whether or not he wants to have a child. And so they get back together, they get married, and then they go on this journey of having a wedding that isn't like, you know, the typical, I don't know, TLC, say yes to the dress kind of wedding. It's complicated further by the fact that Lucy is bisexual and feels very erased as a bisexual woman in the process of marrying a dude, because it just is like this heteronormative performance that she doesn't want to participate in or pay for. So, and like, or make her family and friends travel to participate in and pay for. But she does want to have a ceremony, and her parents are putting a lot of pressure on her to have a more traditional than not kind of ceremony. So it's really about her, this, like, I feel like almost very similar struggle to the one you're going through of like, how do I have a ceremony that commits me to my partner in a way that represents my values without giving in to like all of this consumerism, and a cake is $12 at the grocery store, but if you say it's a wedding cake, it's $1,200, and like, why? And all of that kind of thing that you start to experience when you're planning a wedding and realize that it's all kind of a racket and you don't want it to consume your whole life. So it's really funny. All of her graphic, none of them are novels, actually. I think all of them are memoirs, but all of her books are super, super great. They're funny. They're really well illustrated. She has a really like kind of, I don't even, like sweetly biting is the way that I would describe it, kind of voice that I appreciate. So that's Something New, Tales from a Makeshift Bride by Lucy Nisley.
I'm glad you found something wedding specific, because I have a partnership specific one for you, but it does not touch on weddings. My pick for you is Drop the Ball by Tiffany Dufu. And theoretically, this is a business book, but I read it and was so blown away by how Dufu digs into her marriage and partnership and like the things that she uncovers about the expectations and assumptions she doesn't realize she has and is acting on, and the ways those come out in her partnership and like stand in her own way. And then also the ways that her husband like is just not aware of some of the things that he is doing, and like meeting in the middle, watching the two of them meet in the middle and work through these, what does an equal partnership look like issues, is just so encouraging and insightful and amazing. And like, I am like not getting married, but I am dating like a cis white feminist dude. And like one of these days, I'm going to convince him to read this book, because I really think that if you are in a male female relationship with most men, there are just things that you're not going to understand that they haven't experienced. Mm. And there's things that like we women raised in the West in particular, like, have not really understood about ourselves. And this really digs into them. So Tiffany Dufu is a, like, career person. She, you know, is very happily married to her husband. You know, she has her first child. She goes back to work and, like, finds herself sobbing in the office bathroom on her first day back. And it's because she is trying to do everything. And she's, you can't help but fail when you try to do everything all the time. And so this is her process of unpacking, like, what does it mean to be a mom and also dedicated to her career? What does it mean to have an equal domestic partnership with a man as a woman? What does it mean to be a woman of color in, you know, the society that she's in? There's all of these big, deep questions. And I think that, like I said, like, for anybody who's in that kind of relationship, there is so much food for thought and discussion here. And, like, it would make a perfect read along to get through together. And then also, it's interesting to see her career advice, because she's coming sort of from the, like, you know, there was that whole lean in movement, which has all kinds of problems. And she's highlighting a lot of those problems and sort of finding her own space in that, like, what does it mean to be an ambitious woman question. So there's a lot going on here. But yeah, I really think this is a solid one for those purposes. So again, that's Drop the Ball by Tiffany Dufu.
I think you could really apply a lot of that book to a wedding, like, especially the wedding planning part of it, because so much of wedding planning is about the bride and is. Women are, the bride is always the one expected to do all the planning. And it's almost a trope, right? That, like, dudes
so
don't
true.
Care about what happens to them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that would be helpful. Alrighty. Next question is from Wynn, who says, my sister Ruth is a chef / caterer. She has read every memoir, biography, history, technical, and cookbook known to the universe. What she hasn't read is any fiction that immerses food within the story. Please don't go for the obvious choices, Dandler, Hesser, Reichel, etc. What I'm looking for is a variety of genres or authors that have great food descriptions as part of the story. Literary fiction a plus, and something crazy like sci-fi can be fun too. Take your best shot. Sci-fi is so crazy. Okay, I picked Natalie Tan's Book of Luck and Fortune by Roselle Lim. I love this book so much. It's so feel good and fun, and the food in it is amazing. Roselle Lim is a Filipino Chinese author who immigrated to Canada as a child, and a lot of this book is set in Canada and then San Francisco's Chinatown. It's about a girl named Natalie who hears of her mother's death. She's living in Canada, she hears of her mother's death, and she returns home to, you know, handle the affairs or whatever. She hasn't spoken to her mother in almost a decade because her mother refused to support her career as a chef. Like, her mother was very insistent that she not pursue that line of work. And her mother was also agoraphobic. And so since Natalie would not come home and her mother could not leave, they just have not seen each other in almost a decade. And so when she comes home, she's really surprised at how downtrodden the neighborhood, this part of Chinatown that she grew up in, has become. She runs into a really predatory real estate agent who's trying to gentrify the neighborhood as quickly as possible and move all the people who've been living there for decades out. And then she's, like, shocked to find out that she has inherited her grandmother's restaurant, which is below her mother's apartment. Her mother closed the restaurant when her grandmother died and had, like, really bad memories about it, didn't want to run it, and that's why she had such an emotional reaction to Natalie wanting to run it. And so it has a big element of magical realism in it. There's a neighborhood seer who tells Natalie that, like, what she should do is be a chef in this restaurant. Like, come home, reopen her grandmother's restaurant. She's a talented chef, so she knows how to do it, help revitalize the neighborhood. And in order to do that, she needs to take 3 recipes from her grandmother's cookbook and cook them for her neighbors in a way that will help them with their, like, personal struggles. So, like, it's almost a, what's that book? Water for Chocolate? Is that what it's called?
Like Water for Chocolate.
Like Water for Chocolate, right? Where she can, like, put her intentions into the food, and then the magic of the food kind of happens to the people she gives it to. So you watch that kind of unfold. Like, is it going to work? Is this magic real? There's also an element of romance. The recipes that she's cooking from her grandmother's cookbook are on the page and sound amazing. And of course, there's food throughout the whole thing. Like, every chapter, I think, starts with her feeding someone or herself. There's a really grumpy cat character. It's just a nice, like, oh, I love it. And it's so tasty. Everything in it is so tasty. So that's Natalie Tan's Book of Luck and Fortune by Roselle Lim.
Amazing. I want to eat all the food now. Okay. So my pick for you is The Chef by Marie Ndiaye. And this was translated by Jordan Stump. And it's chef with 2 F's and an E on the end, because apparently that is the French way to signify a female chef, but you still say a chef, as far as I could discover. So this book is a literary fiction about food. And as you might guess from the title that I just explained to you, a female chef specifically. And it's amazing in the strangest way, because the whole book is sort of narrated by this great female chef's, one of her kitchen workers, sous chefs. Unclear what exactly his role was, but he worked with her and like believes himself to have been the closest person to this very reclusive woman. She didn't give interviews. She's, you know, has a daughter, but was kind of had a very complicated relationship with her daughter. And this guy is, you know, clearly being interviewed by a reporter after this woman's death about her and her life. And he's like, well, you know, everybody else is going to tell you lies. I'll tell you the real story. And then he proceeds to tell the story of this woman's life, but you also find out how his own life has gone off the rails. And it's really fascinating because he is a little bit of an unreliable narrator in certain ways, which is super interesting. And also, the sort of oral storytelling style of this is so immersive. So it just sort of meanders, but like I couldn't stop reading. I was like, oh, what's like, where are we going to go next? Like where there's not a clear plot, you know, thrust. There's not a linear, like this happens and then this happens and this happens. It moves around, but in such an interesting way. And you get like, her, you know, impoverished childhood. And then you get her first job where she was actually just, you know, sort of like a housemaid for this couple. And then their cook leaves on vacation. And so they're like, oh, you'll just cook. And that's how she gets her start. And then she, you know, takes over and discovers this talent. And then her wrestling with, you know, being a mother and also having her own restaurant and how to balance those things and, you know, how to give like love in a way that's hard for her because she is very solitary and reclusive. It's just fascinating. And the way that it talks about food isn't like there's no recipes in here really. And sometimes you're not even sure what ingredients have gone into the dish that they're talking about. But the way they talk about the experience of making and eating food is almost spiritual in a way. It feels a lot like a lit fic version of a chef's table episode, I guess is how I want to say it. And I'm personally here for that. Like I really enjoyed the reading experience, and it is kind of a slow burn and you can read it over however long you want, but it's just so good. So again, that's The Chef by Marie Ndiaye, translated by Jordan Stump. And our next question is from Jessica, who says, I have been adamant for years that I don't like romance books. They're too mushy and not for me. Then somehow was talked into reading Red, White, and Royal yes. Blue by Casey McQuiston. Now I like romances, yes. ? Obviously, I need help and direction. LGBT is a major plus, but not required. I've tried the kiss quotient and did not like it at all. When I first came out, I read I Sing You Home. It was okay, but not great. I really like the wit and character building in Red, White, and Royal Blue. Please help. Amanda.
Yeah, you do. Best book ever. Might be my favorite book of the year. I don't know. I haven't looked back at my spreadsheet yet, but it's definitely up there. Okay. I picked The Right Swipe by Alicia Rye for you, which is the first book in her Modern Love series. I'm reading it right now. I'm like halfway through it. I'm obsessed with it. I picked this one because Red, White, and Royal Blue, it has a lot of like snark and sarcasm, and so does The Right Swipe. And there's also that element of like technology built into the plot. The Right Swipe is very much about dating apps. Red, White, and Royal Blue is very much based on emails. So I thought with those kind of similar elements, you might really be into this one. The Right Swipe is about a woman named Rhiannon, who is the head of a kind of like Bumble, Tinder, whatever, dating app. Like she's invented it. She is the CEO. And she does not have a very robust dating life herself. She likes to kind of, you know, whatever, hit it and quit it. This is what she's into. So she has a profile on her own app that she uses when she's traveling to have like one night stands. And then she's open to something more than that, but is not pursuing something more than that, if that makes sense. She's a little bit cynical, a little bit hard inside. And so she has a one night stand with a guy who she really connects with. Like it's a great night. She really connects with him, literally. I get it because it's an app. And he asks to see her again, and she opens herself up and like agrees to see him again. And then he stands her up. And so she's like, writes him off completely, blocks him on the app, moves on. And then when the book opens, she's attending this conference for tech, like, people. And she sees him. She, like, crashes a competing dating app's event in order to, you know, like, see what they're up to, really. She's, like, doing espionage. Doing espionage! That's what's happening. That's a technical term, right? And then she sees the man come out on stage as their new spokesperson. And it turns out his name is Samson. He's a former professional football player. And he is the nephew of the woman who invented this competing app. And she had no idea about any of this, like, who this guy was. So she sees him up there on the stage and is, like, overcome with rage that this man who would dare to stand her up is now working for her competitor. And he sees her in the audience and recognizes her. And you find out his backstory, why he stood her up. It's a very, like, understandable reason. And when he went to go contact her about why he did that, she had already blocked him. So she, like, storms off super, super mad. And he's like, no, love of my life, come back, you know. And they shenanigans ensue. Like, there's business stuff that, and, like, secrets and corporate espionage. And his aunt is this very eccentric lady who walks around wearing, hats with the veils on her face and doesn't come out in public very often. And every character is just, like, hilarious and quirky and a little bit strange. The whole cast is people of color, which I love. And I just thought it was super fun, very witty. And I think if you like Red, White, and Royal Blue, which everyone does without exception, then you will really be into this. So that's The Right Swipe by Alicia Rye.
Oh, love it. We should give a trigger warning, though, for an abusive ex.
Oh, yeah.
In that one.
Putting it in the show notes.
So good. Okay. So, yeah, I picked Dating You, Hating You by Christina Lauren, because I was thinking about, like, you know, the enemies to lovers setup of Red, White, and Royal Blue. And you said you liked the wit and the character building. And Dating You, Hating You, I found so entertaining. I really did like the way the characters were developed. And I don't read a lot of contemporary romance. And I also don't read a lot of, like, corporate contemporary romance. And I was surprised at how much I loved this book. The setup is that Carter and Evie meet at a mutual friend's Halloween party. They're both wearing, like, Harry Potter inspired costumes. And so they're like, hey, fellow nerd. But they just, like, sort of hit it off. Nothing major happens. And then they run into each other again because they are both high powered agents in Hollywood, like film agents, and their agencies are merging. And now there's only going to be one job for the position that they both have. And the, you know, head honcho is pitting them against each other. So, like, they're attracted to each other. They super enjoy talking to each other. They both are professionals who really care about their career. So now what's going to happen? And they proceed to, like, prank the hell out of each other at work to sort of undermine each other in terms of, like, vying for this position. But then also, because they are so, like, laser focused on each other, their chemistry and, you know, connection builds and builds. And so it's really, really entertaining. Like, it's so fun. And I loved the arc of this. I was like, I don't know how this is going to get resolved. I really loved how it got resolved. And there are some, like, full on, like, spit take, laugh out loud, guffaw moments. I won't tell you because I don't want to spoil anything, but, like, it's really amazing. And the Hollywood setting actually worked for me, and I was surprised because I didn't think I was going to like it. But it is just, it's so much fun. I think you'll dig it. So again, that's Dating You, Hating You by Christina Lauren. And now it is time to hear about our next sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Harper Muse, publisher of Troubled Waters. Troubled Waters is an intimate portrait of two generations, a granddaughter and a grandmother, coming to terms with what it means to be family, Black women, and alive in a world on fire. In heartfelt lyrical prose, Mary Inez Hegler weaves an unforgettable story of the climate crisis, Black resistance, and the enduring power of family. Narrated by Janice Abbott Pratt and written by climate justice writer Mary Inez Hegler, the Troubled Waters audiobook is available everywhere May 7th. It follows Corinne as she plans to stage a dramatic act of resistance and peels back the scabs of her family wounds and puts her safety in jeopardy. Both grandmother and granddaughter must bring their unspoken secrets into light to find a path to healing. Known for her essays that dissect and interrogate the climate crisis, drawing heavily on her personal experience as a Black woman with deep roots in the South, Mary Anais Hegler brings us her first work of fiction titled Troubled Waters. Make sure to pick it up. Thanks again to Harper Muse, publisher of Troubled Waters, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Penguin Young Readers. So this book I'm about to tell you about is giving Five Worlds meets Spirited Away realness. It's about a girl fighting her way back home after getting trapped in the spirit world. It follows Anzu, who has moved to a new town during Oban, a time for families to remember and celebrate their ancestors. And ever since her Alba-chan died, Oban has lost its magic. She doesn't feel much like celebrating anymore. So while avoiding holiday festivities, Anzu spots a stray dog down the street, a dog that seems to be staring right at her. So when she chases it, she slips and falls down a bridge, losing consciousness. And when she awakes, she's in the Shinto underworld known as Yomi. The stray dog, she finds out, is actually the gatekeeper of Yomi, and he warns her to return to the human realm before it's too late. Like I said, Miyazaki realness. I'm super excited for this, so make sure to pick up Anzu in the Realm of Darkness by Mai K. Nguyen. And thanks again to Penguin Young Readers for sponsoring this episode.
All right, our next question is from Lisa, who says, "Hello, I'm a teenager who's very confused about a lot of things." Well, okay. I love that introduction. Some examples are why people like mushrooms, how the current political climate came to be, and figuring out what crowds I identify with. At the moment, I'm looking for some books that offer different perspectives or books that would help me or that would make me buy merchandise and rant on Instagram. That is just, I love everything about this question. Right now, my reading tastes lean towards memoirs, YA fiction, dystopia, and sci-fi. Some of my favorite reads are The Giver, Yellow Star, The Hate U Give, Bad Boy, and Ender's Game. I'm quite tired of books that have the main protagonist having a boring and predictable romance with some random side character. I would love books with interesting romances or no romance at all. In addition, I would love books that include complex villains. Okay, so there's a lot going on here. I'm just gonna keep going. I kind of fixated on complex villains, interesting romance, and for some reason, merchandise. I don't know why, but that's the thing that stood out to me. So I picked Six of Crows by Leigh Bardugo, which, out of any book that exists on this planet in the year 2019, has produced the most, like, fan art that I have personally, like, stumbled across on the internet. Fan art and, like, fan merch that you, like, Etsy stuff you can buy. Like, people love making things about Six of Crows and all of the cast of characters. The book is set in her Grisha trilogy universe, so it's like this, I don't know, kind of 18th century Russia kind of setting, except it takes place in Ketterdam, so it's more like an Amsterdam kind of setting. And it is about a band of merry teenagers who are all criminals and come together to perform this heist of breaking into this like impregnable prison complex in order to steal something or someone. Hey, and it would be like the greatest heist ever to have happened in the history of heists, and the payout, the monetary payout for this, you know, band of criminals would be substantial enough to where they could all kind of pursue their own individual dreams. The collection of characters are bad. Like, they are not good people, right? When you talk about complex villains, they're not the villains of the book. They are the antagonists. Kaz Brucker is the main character, and then he has like a collection of a found family, basically, of other orphans and, you know, unwanted castaways, of people he's collected who all have really great skills who help him perform these kind of heists and like run this criminal underworld. But they're thieves. Like, they are thieves. They are, a lot of them are very violent. But, you know, what's the difference between a violent person who is good and a violent person who is bad? Often it's just like who the protagonist is in the book, like who the author has chosen to focus on. So there's a lot of that kind of thing to consider. It is very lush, hence all of the Instagram and like merchandise and Instagram content about it. The world is really well built. It's like very sensual. You can see the sights and smell the smells and hear the sounds. It's funny. All the characters are hilarious. There are a lot of romances going on because these are 17-year-olds. So there are a lot of people who are like, will they, won't they, probably not, maybe a little bit, but also we might die in the meantime, so why don't we put a pin in that kind of stuff happening. it's all really interesting, and it's not boring. None of them are side characters because they're all there like with each other, and I really love the found family kind of trope. So that's Six of Crows by Leigh Bardugo.
Yeah, my new goal in life, Aliza, is to introduce you to the Avatar The Last Airbender fandom, because that's what I decided to do. And also, just a quick note about mushrooms, that they are delicious if cooked correctly. And by correctly, I mean either sautéed with butter or roasted. That is like, those are the correct ways to cook mushrooms. Feel free to at me about that. Okay. So I picked The Rise of Kiyoshi by F.C. Yi and Michael Dante DiMartino. And this is a novel that takes place in the Avatar The Last Airbender universe. But if you have never seen the cartoon show, either Avatar The Last Airbender or Legend of Korra, it's fine, because F.C. Yi does an amazing job of introducing you to this world. So you don't need to know anything to pick up this book. And if you do know things, it is such a delight. It is the story of a young woman named Kiyoshi, who is an orphan. And she lives in this world where, like, once in a generation, basically, there is a person who is an avatar who can wield all four magic elements, like earth, fire, wind, and water. And most people, anybody who can wield an element can only wield one. So the avatar is very special. And they are trying to find the avatar of her generation. And she has taken, like, the test, but failed it. And this other person took the test, and they believe that he is the avatar. So she's a servant in this household. And she, this is, like, not a spoiler, you find out that she is actually the avatar. They just don't know it, because she doesn't look like what they're expecting her to look like. She doesn't, her magic doesn't perform the way they're expecting it to perform. Like, she's just not the shiny magic user that they're expecting. And it's all about her journey to sort of come into her own and, like, figure out who she wants to be. Because also there's all these structures around the avatar that she wants absolutely nothing to do with. There's political shenanigans going on. There's war. There's raiders. There's pirates. There's people looking to use the avatar for their own ends. Like, there's all of this stuff going on. And she actually is best friends with the person who is supposed to be the avatar. So she's got a lot of conflicted feelings about a lot of different things. And this adventure has so much going on. There's amazing friendships. There's found family. There's basically no romance. There's some really creepy, interesting creature villains, and then also some very interesting human villains. So there's a lot going on. And it's the first of a planned 2-book series, so there will be more when you're done with this. And then if you like it and you haven't already, you can watch all the cartoons. They're so good. Oh my gosh. Okay. Sorry. Get really excited about it. And there's, like, there is a lot of fan art and merchandise, mm-hmm. and, like, all the things that you could think of. There's graphic novels and comics. There's just everything. It's fantastic. So again, that is The Rise of Kiyoshi by F.C. Yi. Okay, I will stop talking about Avatar The Last Airbender now. Now we will hear from Sarah, who said, I recently reread Maurice and then watched the Jane Eyre miniseries and got me thinking about romance and forbidden romance. I haven't read much romance, but I'm into the idea of reading a romance with a forbidden romance with a servant or governess or whatever. Can you recommend any good historical romances to scratch that itch? I know almost nothing of the genre, have only read Courtney Milan and some ill-advised reads back in middle school days. LOL. P.S. I just realized Fingersmith fits this ask, but rest assured I have read it and watched the amazing movie. Amanda, what do you got?
So many things for this one. Yay. Okay, I picked The Governess Game by Tessa Dare, which is fairly recent. I think it came out last year. But this is about a governess. It's an accidental governess, though. Her name is Alexandra. She is a quarter Filipina. Hey-o. And she has grown up in the UK. You know, it's a regency, so time period, that kind of time period. And she is, like, a clock worker. That's her job. She doesn't have, you know, family money of her own or whatever, so she works. She goes around to these very wealthy households and sets their clocks to, what is it, Greenwich time or whatever. And this is how she makes her money. She shows up at this dude's house. His name is Chase. He's not a duke or anything, but he will be. He's, like, the heir to a dukedom, to set his clocks. He has two orphans.
To set his clocks. Sorry.
Hey! She's going to say something. You know what I'm saying? Elbow. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. He has two wards. He's caring for two young orphans who are, like, totally wild and keep scaring off their governesses. So when he opens his front door one day and finds this woman looking for work in front of him. He's like, yes. He's waiting for a governess to show up to like interview. So he assumes that's who she is. And he like pulls her in the house and is like, yes, you're hired. Go do this thing. And she's just kind of very confused about what's happening because she has seen him before. She ran into him in a bookstore months before this happened. And he's a total rake. Like, he's very famous in London society for being very handsome and wealthy and, you know, all the things that rakes usually are. And she had a run-in with him at a bookstore, literally. Like, he knocked her stack of books over and she stumbled through the whole interaction, like, kind of made a fool of herself and has been daydreaming about him ever since. And now she's in his house and he's asking her to live with him to teach these kids. And she's not a governess at all, but she agrees to do it after she meets the girls and realizes, like, what they're just wild. And, like, they need somebody who can teach them in the ways that they need to be taught, not just with, like, books and sitting down and discipline and all of that. And, of course, like, she now lives in the house with this super handsome dude. She's very pretty. It's a romance. I'm sure you can imagine what happens after that. But there is resistance. Like, she does work for him, and that's, they both recognize that that's not appropriate. And the power dynamic is addressed. Like, he is very aware that he's taking advantage, that he could be, you know, if he pursued her, that it would be taking advantage of the power dynamic. And he's, like, really careful about that. Also, like, what are people going to think? Like, all the stuff that comes along with that employer, governess, employer, servant kind of trope. It's just so fun. All the books in this series are great. They're all about kind of quirky, strange women who work, except for one of them is a lady, but all the rest of them in the series have like jobs and the things that they have to do when they fall for men who are not always appropriate for them based on social standing or because they're terrible or whatever. And I love it so much. So that's The Governess Game by Tessa Dare.
So I know you asked for historical, but I was thinking about forbidden romances, and I wanted to give you a contemporary option because I think that it has all of the really intense tension and like, ugh, this is wrong, but right, but wrong. Like, it has all of that that you're looking for, and it handles it in such a beautiful way. Oh, like, makes me mad. It's The Professor by Charlotte Stein. And so Esther is the main character, and she is she's a graduate student. It's been a minute since I read it, but she's a student, and she has the hots for her very handsome professor. And she is like, she's a very average student. Like, she just kind of like, you know, bullshits her way through her classes. And her real passion is writing erotic stories in her free time. And one day she was supposed to have turned in a paper to this professor, and she turned in one of her erotic stories. Oops. Instead. Yeah. Big oops. And he's like this very foreboding, you know, closed off, like really handsome, but like definitely like not warm or approachable person. And so he like calls her to his office and she's like, oh God. And he's like, this is better than any paper you've turned into me. So you're going to keep writing these. And she's like, what? Record scratch? Like, what? And they then, like, so now she's writing erotic fiction for her hot professor. And it is such a bananas setup and development. And it actually goes to some dark places. Like, this is a very silly, kind of funny premise that gets really intense and goes to some really dark places as they try to navigate, like, because, you know, teacher student, like, that is fraught. Like, talk about forbidden. And the book doesn't take that lightly or like use it just as like in a fetishy way. Like, it is super steamy, but it's also super thoughtful about all of the complicated and dangerous power dynamics involved in this relationship. And I so appreciated how they resolved this issue. Like, it was stunning. And I think I cried a little bit at the end, if I recall correctly. Like, it gave me a lot of feelings. So yeah, this is not generally my jam personally. But like, when an author does it so well, it's impossible not to be impressed. And this, I will never forget reading this. So again, that's The Professor by Charlotte Stein.
I am looking this up on my Libby app right now.
Shout out to Sarah McLean, who originally recommended it to me.
Oh, she's so great.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Our next question is from, our last question is from Risha, who says, I'm currently looking for a tragic story. The more depressing, the better, for a cathartic experience. Themes like suicide, self-harm, any kind of assault and abuse are totally fine. Anything that would leave me in tears is just what I need. I have a month-long vacation coming in a few weeks, and I'd prefer a lengthy book that's not too slow-paced. The way that you spend your vacation and the way that I spend my vacation are very different. That is some intense reading choices. Okay.
No judgment, though.
No, no judgment. I'm just, like, amazed that that's the thing that you want to do. People are so fascinating. Okay. Go with God. All the trigger warnings are coming for these books, for both of them. I'm looking at our agenda right now. My book has trigger warnings for harm to children, child sexual abuse, and suicide. It's Miracle Creek by Angie Kim. And let me tell you about tragic and cathartic and depressing. The book opens with a small child being really graphically murdered. And I am, I know, and I'm like a hard pass for that kind of thing. And yet it's still, I could not stop reading it. I could not stop. So it's a courtroom drama about a miracle submarine. So, and I'm like air quoting this. So these are above ground hyperbaric chambers that people go into to get really high intensity oxygen breathing treatments that are thought to help treat a variety of ailments. So everything from like infertility to autism to all kinds of things. And so the book starts with this court case about a group of people who have gone into the hyperbaric chamber, which they call the Miracle Submarine, for their treatments. It's a big, you know, cast of character. Most of them are kids there with their moms. And there's an explosion, and you're in, well, I don't want to tell you exactly how they die, because it's, like, gross, but one of the kids in the submarine dies in a very graphic way in this explosion, and you read about it. And his mother is arrested for setting the fire and for trying to kill him. And another mother in the chamber dies as well. And so the courtroom drama is about her trial and whether or not she did it. So the chapters switch back and forth from different characters' points of view as you discover who has what secrets and how that wraps into who actually committed this crime that resulted in this child dying. And let me tell you, I have never been so compelled to finish reading something so unpleasant. Like, there is no one likable in this book. No one is likable. They're all very flawed, as they're just humans, you know? You are in deep, deep into everybody's messy, 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 messy crap. And a child who's autistic and has no ability to defend himself in any way from any of this drama dies. And it was so hard to read, and I just couldn't stop. She's so good. Like, she's such a good writer. And Angie Kim, the author, is like a miracle submarine mom. Like, she has experience with this community. And she's also a trial lawyer. So, like, she's bringing all of her personal experience to bear here. It's also an immigrant story because the owners of this treatment facility are Korean immigrants. Their daughter is Korean American, as is the author. And so there's that experience put into the mix. And the way that this book portrays what it's like to be a mother, a parent, but specifically mothers, because mothers have way more pressure put on them, the mother of a special needs child, and the things that you're expected to give up and do for your child, and like what that can make you do. Like, people completely believe that this mother killed her kid because like the pressure is too great. I don't need to keep going on, but it's amazing. It's an amazing book. I don't know that it's not going to take you a month to read. It took me like a day to read, but that's because I couldn't stop. Like, I just couldn't stop. And somebody who reads at a normal pace and doesn't have like this and isn't just going to sit down and read all day obsessively would probably take longer than that. But it's just amazing. It's amazing. So that's Miracle Creek by Angie Kim.
Yeah, my book is also on the shorter side. It is, I think, even less than 200 pages, but it's bigger on the inside, and it's going to give you all the feelings.
Book tardis.
And you can read more. yeah, exactly. And you can read more than one book during your vacation, hopefully. I picked Heartberries by Therese Marie Myatt, and this comes with trigger warnings for self-harm, domestic violence, and struggles with mental health. So Therese grew up on a very small Indian reservation in the Pacific Northwest, I think British Columbia, and the Seabird Island Indian Reservation. And she had a very dysfunctional upbringing. Her mother was a social worker who, like, repeatedly got involved with prisoners. Her father was an abusive drunk, but also a brilliant artist. And, you know, she really went through it as a kid. And then she herself grows up, has children, but is hospitalized with a diagnosis of PTSD and bipolar 2 disorder. And her life is very dysfunctional. She is not able to care for one of her children who ends up in the foster system. She has this really complicated and like dysfunctional relationship with a man that you hear about. And everything is just, it is rough. It's rough. And what I felt while reading this book was how what Maya is trying to do is she's writing this from the hospital. So she's trying to write her way through her trauma at, like, I think a therapist recommendation. And so she's in it. Like, I think we get a lot of stories like this from somebody who's already out of it, and they can look back and have perspective and see, like, okay, here's where I was, and then this is what I went through, and now here is where I am. But Therese Myatt is in it pretty much the whole time. I mean, there are like moments of perspective, but you get that really raw, intense experience of trying to unpack all of these incredibly difficult, you know, relationships and mental health diagnoses and, you know, her position as a mother and as a daughter. And oh man, it's just a lot. And then of course, you know, she is Native American and how that plays into it. And so there's just a ton going on here, and it is incredibly raw and just so beautifully written. It's so beautifully written, and it isn't an easy read. And I think there is a lot of catharsis if you struggled with any of the things, or, you know, things that make you feel the way that she felt. It doesn't have to be the same situation. Obviously, we can share feelings even if we don't share circumstances. Mm. And yeah, I think it's an incredible read, and it is a lot about catharsis because that's what she's working towards. So again, that is Heartberries by Therese Marie Myatt.
And that's our show. On that happy note.
What a note to end on. I know. Whoops.
Ooh, I should have rearranged those questions. Whatever. It's fine. Thank you all so much for listening. Please go leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you to our sponsors. You can find us on social media. I'm on Instagram at I'm Amanda Nelson.
And I am on Twitter as Jen IRL. That's Jen with two N's, IRL. And on Instagram as I am Jen IRL.
And we will talk to y'all next week.